Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, March 29th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect in the past 16 years to improve the quality of my life, manage my relationships, and turn any negative emotion into part of the infallible guide for my personal betterment. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Print it off. Use it as often as you'd like. You can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. It'll give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We encourage people to do that soon and often because it usually provokes fodder for good comments, questions, and discussions. And if you have comments, questions, or discussions you'd like to bring up, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number. And I will turn on your microphone and we can have a discussion. We are in the middle of doing the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook. Today is the 88th day of the year, but I'd like to back up to Saturday's lessons that say only God's plan for salvation will work, and really solidifying several review lessons before that, holding grievances is an attack on God's plan for salvation. And this reminds me of a quote from the Way of Mastery where it says, of course you will have anger come up, but stop fooling yourself into thinking that it's justified. Right? Stop rationalizing anger, because anger is an alarm, is an emotional response or an intense energy that's best used by us as an indication that we are in error, that something is off in our internal process for creating perceptions. And so if we can turn the focus inside whenever we're angry and understand that if we hold any kind of grievance, it's literally arguing with or attacking the unfolding nature of creation. And then if we are so willing, we can choose it to motivate ourselves to pick up the tools and dismantle the distortions in perception, which are bringing that those ideas to our minds. Today is lesson 88. It's a review of these ideas. The light has come. In choosing salvation rather than attack, I merely choose to recognize what is already here. Salvation is a decision made already. Attack and grievances are not there to choose. That is why I always choose between truth and illusion, between what is there and what is not. The light has come. I can but choose light, for it has no alternative. It has replaced the darkness, and the darkness is gone. If you'd like to apply that more specifically, these ideas are offered. This situation cannot show me darkness, for the light has come. The light in you is all that I would see, and then name the person. I would see in this situation only what is truly there. The second lesson for review is, I am under no laws but those of the Creator. Here is the perfect statement of my freedom. I am under no laws but the Creator's. I am constantly tempted to make up other laws and give them power over me. Why? Well, because that's what we're trained to do in this culture. We basically, until we learn otherwise, we are basically just playing out the conditionings we've been given. I suffer only because of my belief in these false laws. They have no real effect on me at all. I am perfectly free of the effects of all laws except those of the Creator. And the laws of the Creator are the laws of freedom. Specific forms of this thought might include, my perception of this situation shows me I believe in laws that do not exist. And that would be true any time I have a negative emotional state or I judge that something is bad or wrong or shouldn't be happening. I see only the laws of God at work in this situation. Let me allow the Creator's laws to work in this situation and not my own laws or the hallucination of my own laws. So those are the lessons and the review for today. Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, would have us looking at lesson 88, Goosebumps, the skin condition, not the novel. She quotes Liba Bray as saying, we create the illusions we need to go on. And one day, when they no longer dazzle or comfort, we tear them down, brick by glittering brick. Pam writes, I am free. I am under no laws but my own. She offers a song titled Best Day of My Life by American authors. But it's really hard to write a book, be a comedian, make it as an artist. Today's lesson is the perfect statement of our freedom. We can listen to consensus reality, make up laws, and give them power. But as lesson 88 reminds us, consensus reality is dead wrong. A comedian grew up in a small university town. He was a nerd and a smart kid. He studied political science in college. But after seeing Chris Rock's stand-up show, Never Scared, he got goosebumps. It was the big one. It was the thing he wanted to do. He started making YouTube videos with the Photoshop body of Conan O'Brien. He put that vision on his mind. He started moving in that direction. Today, you'll find plenty of YouTube videos of the nerdy immigrant kid from the small college town, only now they are of his one-man comedy show or his Netflix series or his stint as MC of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. As the Course tells us, anything is possible once we let go of consensus reality. What gives you goosebumps, my friends? So our call in number is 563-999-3581. And we have plenty of time. We have 49 minutes left for conversation, for questions, for comments. And as I said, we appreciate when people raise a hand and make a statement or ask a question, because it makes it so much easier to live into our intention. And with this work, our intention is to be of service. So how can we be of service to you today? It was a weekend of quiet and self-care, and as I had mentioned over the in the show on Friday, there have been quite a few people that I know who are going through very difficult times, losses of family members and friends, and so there was a lot of time for quiet reflection and use of the tools. And I just state unequivocally again that I am very glad that I have access to these tools, that the access has been given to us absolutely free, and that whatever my inheritance was from my parents, it left me in the space where I am willing to pick up and use tools like this for my betterment. And so I hope you are in a similar situation, and I hope you'll share with us if you've got comments or questions. The tool specifically is the one I made most use of this weekend, was the Reality Management Worksheet. And you know, each time I did a worksheet this week, I got more connected to or aware of sadness and various things that I'd used over the years to create the thoughts that fueled sadness in my life. And when I would do a worksheet and map out what I thought was causing my sadness in my life today, and then figure out what the goals were that my mind was telling me absolutely should be happening that weren't, and cancel those goals and ask to be shown something, I invariably saw situations from the past, a variety of them, that I had used as the rationalization for deep sadness and resentment and hurt and, you know, the belief of failure, etc. And every time I did that, it helped me get clear about the fact that the sadness I'm tapping into isn't really about the situation today, that as I move into and through the use of various tools, including Byron Katie's work and Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet and the understandings of teachers like Guy Finley and Paramahansa Yogananda, that, and Michael Singer, that the flow of life is just happening, and the sadness and the anger and the resentment that I experience is an internal creation in me. It's not being caused by the outside events. And so layer after layer, I was shown what I would need to let go of to cease the process of generating the sadness. And so I've moved a lot of energy this weekend and seen through the false nature of a lot of the beliefs I was holding related to various situations that I had believed in the past were causing my sadness. And that's what we're hoping to be able to encourage others to do with this work, and leave ourselves more wide open to experience of the joy of aliveness and the appreciation for the gift of life expressing in, through, as, and around each one of us. I was left with deep gratitude for the participation that people have been gracing us with for years in the support groups. Some of the comments and questions have led to deeper insights for me, and I encourage people. We were having a discussion the other day about why there aren't more people making use of, you know, the support groups, and the consensus is because it takes this work. It's not a Tony Robbins seminar where you get all pumped up to go out and live your life differently, and it's not a quick fix by any means. And yet, the consistently good results I get from applying these tools is unmatched by any other set of tools I've ever encountered. So that's why I keep coming back to them. That's why I keep supporting other people and using them. Somebody for our Thursday group, I think it was, we watched the interview I had done back in 2013. And I was surprised to hear myself talk so clearly about these same tools. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. I have to warn you, I'm expecting a phone call that I have to take, but I thought I would press one because I've had some more questions. One was, I've been doing a lot of, well, I can't call it artwork. It's sort of doodling, making cutouts and doodles, and it's been very restful, and I find that my mind shuts off during the times that I'm doing that, which is a kind of meditation, I guess. I mean, I'm not going to call it anything fancy, but it's very soothing. But in order to do as many as I want, I have always kept journals. And as a parishioner at my church, I was senior warden and junior warden and on the vestry, and we had to go to lots of meetings, and I'm a fidgeter, so I would always make doodles. So my notebooks are filled with some pretty incredible stuff. And I've been mining those, taking pictures of the ones that I want to keep. But in the process of doing that, I am reading a little bit here and there. And I realized the issues I have had all my life, various ways of presenting themselves, but it was only a few years ago that Michael's tools came into my life and gave me such a solid grounding in being able to handle these questions and feelings that I've stopped writing in my journals. I haven't written in my journals, and I don't mind. I'm actually glad. I don't think journals, for me, are all that healthy. They're places where I process things. They're not so much a recounting of what happened, who went where, when. They're always my thoughts, my musings, my worries. Usually I go to a journal when I'm not feeling very good. So you can imagine that the journals are skewed. If anybody should come across them, they'd say, oh, my God, this woman is struggling so much. And I was. But it was interspersed with lots of happy living that isn't necessarily down on the papers. But one thing that struck me that coincides with everything we've been learning and everything we try to do is the only safe place to be is in the absolute present, because even the Course in Miracles says that if you think you have a body, you're going to be scared. There, things happen to bodies and things change. Byron Katie says, hooray, things change, how wonderful, and we can live into that. I'm not there yet. I have found change. some change good and some change scary and heartbreaking and, you know, so I guess I'm just adding to what you say is the tools help me put solid foundations under all these musings and thoughts and struggles, and they go around and around and around. But I would love to hear you talk about how you manage or how we could manage to stay in the present, because the present doesn't stay there. It isn't a matter of being in time exactly. I don't know what the present really is, because as soon as we think of it, it's gone, and we've got another present.
Well, but it's all there is. It's all there is.
Yeah.
And to begin with, I would, you know, help you by correcting your denial, saying that change is scary. And you may have decided to use thoughts about change to generate fear, but there's nothing about change that's inherently scary because, you know, while at one and the same time, the present moment is all there is, change is all there is. Right? Everything that begins in time ends in time. Time and life and creation as energy is always in motion. It's always in a flow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not inherently scary. You know, there isn't fear out in the forest until a human being goes out there and decides to generate fear.
Yeah,
it's not like there are
true.
Clouds of fear hanging out in the forest like clouds of mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say...
I'm taking a deep breath on that. Yeah.
Well, good, because when you say change is scary... That's what you're creating. You're creating a vision in your mind that there's this, you know, this external entity like, you know, like a fog bank that is fear that
mm-hmm.
is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no fear anywhere in the world unless there's a human mind there to create it.
Mm. I wonder why it is that even to look at the drawers and boxes filled with journals that go back all the way to graduate school fill me with dread, and I think I ought to just burn them. And I had a discussion with my daughter. Talk about an example. The other night I could not sleep because I came across an account of a time when Tim Bingham and I were visiting Catherine and my daughter and her husband, then husband. And he had just gone into one of his rages and absolutely verbally annihilated his middle son, 7 years old. The middle son was inconsolable, and it wasn't just that he was crying. He absolutely could not hear support. He was beyond reach for a scary amount of time. And I lay in bed and just couldn't sleep, and it was as if my heart was getting ripped out. Well, I created that myself. I read an old journal. It was past. It was something in the past. But my thought is, my journals are full of stuff like that. And life is like that. And the past is full of sad and scary stuff. Boy, I have work to do on this. Man. And I even talked to this middle son, grandson, who is now in his early 20s and suffering from anxiety and depression. And I told him about what I had learned. And he got mad at me. You know what he said? He said, "I'm so sick of hearing people rag on my dad. He does have a problem. And I'm afraid to establish a full connection with him, but we're talking now, and he's in therapy. And I've got my dad back in a way. He really listens to me. He didn't want to hear my stuff, and yet I was telling him that by way of saying, you have a reason to be suffering in some ways in your present life. Well, I dragged a whole lot of stuff in there that he didn't want to hear. Made a big mistake."
Please let that go. Please let that go. That's not a big mistake. It's not even a mistake. It's just a thing. And you offered something, and he said no thanks in the best way he could. And so you say, okay, great. Glad you're in a different space. We can move on.
Right.
I think I'll go home and burn my journals. But it's not a mistake to have mentioned that.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. Good. But I didn't have to go there either. And the journals have a lot of meaning to me. I could do worksheets on journals, for gosh sakes. I mean, it's one reason people don't come to this stuff is you're right. The work is never ending. My mother-in-law, who functioned very highly, a creative writer, successful career, successful family life, successful marriage. She knew I was studying to be a psychotherapist. She said, why stir the pot if things are working all right? And I thought, that's a question. That's a good question. But for me, things weren't working well enough. And maybe most of us feel as if things are working well enough, and we don't want to stir that pot. And I guess that's okay.
It doesn't have to be most of us. We don't have to worry about what everybody else is doing. We can just understand that there are tools here for when we get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not one of those people who says everybody should be doing, you know, 5 worksheets a day every day of their life minimum. I'm the person who keeps saying be gentle with yourself, you know, and use the tools if you feel a need, and if you don't feel a need, get on with your life, enjoy it.
You're the
live,
Pam
love, laugh,
Grout.
And be happy.
Good. You're being Pam Grout here with the Course in Miracles lessons, and I love that. That's true. That's good. And I love that she is that way, too. I actually have started listening to the songs she suggests. I was trained in classical music. I don't know any of that stuff. None of it. It's kind of fun to hear it and learn about something new. Yeah.
So it isn't, you know, the point I was just making is that it doesn't matter if most of us this and most of us that. What's happening with you right now? Are you having anxiety? Are you beating yourself up because you've created this illusion that you've made a big mistake with your grandson? Well, I'll be happy to support you in, you know, releasing that false impression and focusing on the beautiful, wondrous, exciting, loving parts of yourself and your grandson and the progress that's being made and in that family and others, and enjoy your life.
Another deep breath. Okay. Duly noted. Yeah. Well, my daughter said, Mom, you should burn those journals. And I went upstairs and I said, Tim Bingham, I'm going to burn these journals. He said, oh, no, you don't. You don't do that. I think that's a bad idea. And so I didn't burn my journals. They're still sitting there yelling at me.
And what does he think you need to do with them?
I don't know. That's a good question. I didn't ask him. I guess he thinks they're of some worth. And for what, I don't know. I know my kids won't. Who has time to read all that stuff? Nobody. It's different than writing an autobiography. Yeah.
And you also put out another idea in this call already, that you've recognized that primarily you only wrote in those when you were having a rough time.
Yeah.
So your journals are full of all of these difficulties and stuck points and feelings of being overwhelmed and negative. So if you recognize that and you realize, you know, it's not really a very balanced view of my life, then it's a good question. If you don't want to get rid of them, what do you want to do with them?
Well, it's true that they're full of all sorts of things. Like I came across a travelogue account of when my daughter and I traveled. This is during the bad time. She said, Mom, do you want to go to Scotland with me to the holy places, Lindisfarne? And I went. And this was just before I found Michael Rice's work. I went with her and this same middle son to this holy place, this holy island. And oddly, I had had terrible gastric problems before going. And I thought, oh, my gosh, it was something like irritable bowel syndrome. Nobody could diagnose it. I went there anyway. I thought, I cannot pass this chance up to be with my daughter. Well, the full whole time I was there, I was as healthy as could be, energetic, had got plenty of sleep, loved the long walks, loved the talks by, I forget his name, a wonderful theologian. You've heard of him, I'm sure. But the food agreed with me, and then I came home and I was sick again, and that's when I thought, something about the way we're harvesting our food isn't right, and it turned out to be gluten. And it's true, in Europe, wheat is still, at least in this place at that time, wheat was safe to eat because they weren't covering it with pesticides or it wasn't genetically modified. I don't know what the matter was, but that was a great thing. And then Michael's work came along. Why am I telling you this? Oh, yeah, just that I'm talking about a wonderful trip with lots of details that I would have forgotten if I hadn't written them down. So, yeah, this trouble is there's good stuff in there, and you have to plow through it. Reason to keep them.
Okay. Well, enjoy them then. And when you find one that's stirring up something that's unsavory, either burn it or do the worksheets that are on it. And
that's what always.
So you're not stuck in the. Go ahead.
Amaze me about Michael Rice. He goes to movies to get himself all worked up so he can get rid of more bad stuff buried in his unconscious that he hasn't dealt with yet. He goes to movies. Who needs movies?
Let's sort this out a little bit, because you're not as far down the path as some people have been about this, but you're not exactly on target with this, right? So let's give voice to the idea here. Michael and Jeannie, I still remember there was a time somebody was returning from a trip, and they're at the airport, and they're calling and saying, you know, Michael Rice, he's done so many worksheets that he doesn't get upset anymore with regular, ordinary life. He has to go to movies to get upset.
That's it.
That's not true. That's not even close to true. Ask Jeannie. Spend a week with Michael yourself, living in living quarters with Michael. You will understand. He's just like everybody else. There is nothing special about Michael Rice as far as his processing of emotions and getting triggered and having baggage and having family issues. And there's nothing special about him.
Mm-hmm.
So why? What is this thing about going to movies? Well, number one, for a long time in his life, he didn't go to movies that would get him triggered. If you listen to his story, this is the whole story. Right? So it's not like, hey, Michael says we should go to movies, so now I'm going to movies. Listen to your own internal guidance. Michael Rice did for years, and for years he didn't go to movies that were upsetting. Listen to your own guidance. That's the beginning of this. Don't do it because, well, Michael says this. That if you're doing anything because Michael says you should, you're missing the point of this work. What's the point of this work? The point of this work is to present people with tools that they can use on their own to remove the garbage in their own mind and their own family system so they can get direct, immediate access to the only teacher you need, which is your connection to an internal wisdom Ancient Aramaics called it Ruka Dakucha, an elemental force specific to humans, implanted in each one of us, that's there to break off the effects of our errors in thought and guide us to truth and happiness if we just ask it to. Everyone has access to this. So the point of this work is not to do what some teacher tells you to do. So to begin with, Michael Rice spent years where he did not go to movies that were upsetting because he didn't want it, because he didn't have access to the tools or trust the tools enough or whatever. And then after he'd been using these tools and doing his own work, he reached a point where his own guidance said, hey, wait a minute, if you're telling everybody that we create our own upset, then isn't it amazing what your mind is doing when it's telling you that when you go to the movie's getting you upset? And here's what you should do. You should take some worksheets with you and go into the movie. And so that he reached that his own level with that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a real misstep to decide, well, I'm going to go do this because Michael says this. You know, listen to your own internal judgment and do what your own judgment tells you to do. So here's the second thing. Michael has plenty of issues in his own life that he could choose to do worksheets on. Michael gets triggered on a daily basis, just like every other human being. What he has discovered through his own work is that it's easier for him to make progress by going to a movie now that he understands at deeper levels that it's not the lights flashing on the screen or the sound waves hitting his ear that are causing his upset. And so for him, it's an easier thing to go to the movie to do some work. So he's not doing it because he never gets triggered in everyday life. He's doing it because he can get triggered and understand he doesn't have to have his own child die or his neighborhood blown up in a war, or in order for him to go and have those images stirred up and have his thoughts about it resonate the emotions in his life, and he can get work done with this distancing image, this allowance for, yeah, it was just a movie, and so it's easier to move through it, rather than wait for life to come along and have the actual event happen in his life, for which, of course, the same tools could be used. But he reached a level in his own work where he understood it was easier, and his own internal guidance was, Michael, go ahead. Go to the movie theater. Take your worksheets with you. So I hope that clarifies it a bit. It's not that, you know, he's so far beyond, he's so advanced. That's just hogwash.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Making an idol of anyone is a bad idea. And I didn't intend to do that, but obviously I did. A mild, tame idol, considering how idol worshiping I've been in my past. So I have gotten ahead on this one, but you're absolutely right. I'm not altogether clear of the habit. I bet a lot of us aren't, but I'm one of them. Yeah. Well, do you go to movies? I don't. Not much. Same reason.
I don't go to movies for that.
Yeah.
If I'm going to take the time to go to a movie, I'm going to do it so I can enjoy myself, not do emotional work.
Right. Right. But you have to pick them. I have to pick them pretty carefully because movies can be very disturbing.
Well, you're going to want to clear up the way you just said that so you don't trick yourself into thinking the movie is doing something to you.
I am susceptible.
No, because that still puts it outside of you, that something outside of you is doing it to you. The movie isn't disturbing.
Okay.
What's happening when you go to a movie is you have thoughts, you choose certain thoughts and interpretations. The interpretations you place on the things you see on the screen can resonate with traumatic energies you have, or you can use them to generate negative thoughts. So that can happen. But it's not the movie doing it to you. How do we know that? Because there's all kinds of people sitting in that movie that don't have the same response. So everybody in the movie who's watching it would have to have exactly the same flavor and intensity of response if it were going to be accurate to say the movie was disturbing.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. But Michael does say guard the portals of your mind, and that's what I do.
Okay. And is there a question or a comment that you want to add to that in there?
No, I see the denial. Gosh, it's everywhere. I seem to have regressed or something. A pile of denial.
Well, listen, if that were true, then you're regressing right back into normalcy, because our entire culture is based on that. And so it's not a thing to say, oh, I've regressed. It's just to say, oh, look what I did with that process. It's just what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it doesn't create an identity for you. It doesn't change. It doesn't change your true nature. It doesn't, negate any learning you've done. So,
good.
It's okay.
Good. Does anybody else want to talk?
I don't know. You want to invite somebody?
Ellen, are you around? Help. Yeah. No,
well, she is. You have her well trained. Hello, Ellen.
Hello, Dr. Tim. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Ellen.
I'm letting everybody
here
know with that kind of a joking statement that Ellen did put her hand up. I'm not putting her hand up out of turn or opening up her microphone out of turn. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you. Yeah, I just came on because Susan invited me, but I did want to say that I don't believe it's possible to regress. So, I would take that thought and just check it out. I mean, I would take any thought that seems negative and check it out. I was reading Byron Katie again this morning, and I read chapters 32 and 33, and wow, so wonderful, so wonderful. And even the one before that where she comes home from work and her snack that she thinks is waiting for her in the refrigerator is gone, and she realizes her husband has eaten it.
Yep.
And, she realizes in the end that she hadn't actually bought it for herself, that she had bought it for him, and how considerate of her to have done that, and how considerate of her to be thinking in this vein, considerate of herself. And she said it was so wonderful that she realized that what she had planned had fallen short of reality, and that what ended up happening was so much sweeter than what she had planned.
It's so funny. you're right where I am in the book, and I love that story. I'm just about to start chapter 34, and I'm just loving her. So yeah, she is so enlightened. I am, you know, there again. I've put her on a pedestal. Here's this woman who is in such joy all the time, and I'm so greedy for it. So you're doing it already, Ellen.
I was just staring at her picture on the front cover this morning, and
yeah,
I swear,
I do that too.
Her smile just kept deepening and deepening, and I was so connected with her. I almost was expecting her to start talking to me through the picture. I mean, she does talk to me at times in my mind. But, you know, then I tell myself anything is possible. And then, you know, one of the lessons we're reviewing today is I am under no laws but God's. It's, you know, and I just talked about watching movies. Over the weekend I never even knew that this movie existed. Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, yeah?
It was just made in 2018. I had never heard of it. I don't go to the movies, but I will, you know, record things off of television and watch them. And so it was wonderful. Again, it's the original Mary Poppins is one of my all-time favorites because it's all about anything is possible and opening your mind to that.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was wonderful, too. I mean, and all the songs, you know, it was also a musical, and all the songs were about taking, you know, a different perspective on things and lighting your own lamp, and it was just wonderful. So, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of selective in the movies I watch. Well, I try not to watch, like, scary movies, but a lot of times I don't even know what a movie is about, and I'll just think, sounds interesting. And more often than not, it's like it's got so many times it's got a message for me on something that I'm working through at the time. And there it is. And it's like, wow, thank you.
Yeah.
I used to think it was a waste of my time to watch movies. And then that started happening. And I was like, wow, I guess I'm meant to be watching these movies because they're really helping me.
Well, that's a very Byron Katie-esque way of looking at life.
Mm-hmm.
And what her message is that any one of us could choose that filter for anything. For anything that occurs. That's also the Michael Singer approach to life. That's his Surrender Experiment book.
Mm. Well, that gets back to what Pam Grote said in her commentary for Lesson 88. I am free. I'm under no law but my own. She doesn't say but God's. She rewords that lesson.
Right, but she says also, instead of saying God, she says love and the dude and myself, et cetera. So uses all those various things. And she's trying to speak to it from the same message the Course in Miracles is giving us, that we're all connected to that source.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are vehicles for that source at this level. And if we would really open up to, you know, close our mind to that, to mind chatter, so that we could hear the voice for God, we would become channels. I mean, wouldn't it just be wonderful if everyone just was, everything that someone said to you was, you realized was, wow, this is God speaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And other people had that same experience when you talk to them, you know, and you don't even know what's going to come out of your mouth until it comes out. I've had that experience a few times, and I think, wow, where did that come from? It really helped me. I know it was for the other person, but I think it was for me, too. I didn't know that I didn't know that. And then it came out of my mouth.
Oh, that's great.
That is a common experience. The more people do the work, the more we remove the false beliefs and the garbage from our conditioning, the more we see, you know, we say things that are right on track, that what's underneath our pain is more insight than we could imagine. And that's that being connected to that internal wisdom we were just talking about.
You went through a lot these last few days, Dr. Tim, with Paul, your friend. And there was something else I don't remember. Weren't there a couple of things that happened?
Yeah, I have several patients that have lost family members or friends. I've got my own friend who was the, you know, essentially my brother's best friend from college that we just found out has got such severe dementia he doesn't remember where he went to college or who my brother is, et cetera. He's had a couple of strokes and surgeries. And and then I'd received a message from my ex-wife out of the blue that was just, you know, it resonated all of the old pain and sadness of the divorce and not being able to have the family I wanted to raise my children in. And, yeah, all those things have happened.
Wow. And were you running any groups or seeing any clients at the same time, or was it pretty much an inner weekend?
No, I didn't run groups or see clients over the weekend, but all of those things happened during the week.
Yeah, but
so
I mean, you said you were doing a lot of
I spent a quiet weekend doing my own processing and, you know, helping out family here and there where I could, and doing self-care.
Right.
So
self-care
was there a question in that?
Really important.
Susan, was there a question in that?
There was, but I've forgotten it. It might come back to me if I just cool my jets here and settle back in. I guess it was connected with, I mean, those are potential sources of extreme upset. And you said something, you've said it several times, but it really went through this time about how the best thing I can do for my son and grandson is to see them whole and to love them and to trust the process of their own journey. And I've been connecting my holding on to trying to help and fix them with my sore left arm. And it does seem kind of strange and wonderful that my left arm is so much better, and I really am so much better. Whatever anxiety is coming up, and there is some, seems to be just from elsewhere, not connected to those things, but just needing to be looked at. And that's not a very good connection to what you were going through, but I was thinking about how we handle our upsets. And you have all these tools, and you've given us so many tools.
Well, what I can say about it is that when I use them, my life is better. My experience of life is better. So whether it's the loss of a loved one or, you know, supporting other people in going through death and loss or relationship difficulty, if I can stay honest, you know, and there are, I know there are various, I've been trained by enough different people, and there's all kinds of different views of this. And there are some people who would say it would be completely unprofessional to show your emotions in a session with a patient, et cetera. But to pretend that I have no emotions when I'm having strong emotions is really bad role modeling, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree.
So I get through these things these days the way I always have gotten through them best, which is by staying open, allowing myself to feel the emotions, using the tools. Sometimes I'll tap on myself in the middle of a session. Sometimes tears will come, and I let them come. And sometimes, other emotions come up, and I use my tools, sometimes silently, sometimes out loud, in the session, so as to role model what's a process. How can these tools actually be used in real life? And
such
so I did that last week. Well, I did that last week. I did some of that on the internet show, and I did it over the weekend where I, you know, was very honest with people about what I was feeling. I took time to, you know, do some worksheets and spend some quiet time and listen to good music and get some bike rides in. And instead of feeling compelled to be really, really productive in the traditional sense in terms of work, et cetera.
Good.
And I'm assuming that there will be people, I'm sure I've run into people in the past who have been patients of mine or clients, depending upon how you want to look at that relationship, who have not wanted to deal with a therapist who is honestly feeling things. And that's got to be okay. And if they choose not to come back, that's got to be okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a wonderful permission for me as a therapist. I mean, when we run our Zoom group, I don't function as a therapist. I'm the sort of facilitator because I'm a student of the tools. So, you know, Ellen was doing a profound piece of work the other day and cried at one point, and I'm sitting on the other side of my Zoom screen, Tim Bingham beside me, and I'm crying along with her, and I'm thinking, oh, it's just all right to do this and do it this way, and it's a permission you've given too, although in that situation I don't think I would have had any compunction because I wasn't functioning as a therapist, and I've only had one occasion with a man I was working with whose story was so moving that I couldn't resist crying too. I mean, I didn't wail or anything. He could see that I was feeling with him and for him and whatever that is. But it's great to have you sort of give a formal permission to do that, be a professional at the same time.
Yeah, there's nothing unprofessional about it. There's nothing unprofessional about feeling feelings. There's something very inauthentic about pretending you don't have feelings when you do.
Except, oh, that's true, but some therapists would say, I'll keep them to myself because this is the client's hour and I'm not in any way wanting to distract from that. I mean, you could say that.
There's a certain value to that. I mean, like if I am, you know, the thing that comes to mind is when I was in grad school working at a hospital, I would get so triggered when kids would do self-mutilation that I would want to punch them in the face. And I saw right there in the chapter of the book on psychopathology that the face punching is not a therapeutic model. It's not a therapeutic technique. It doesn't really. But in those situations, I wouldn't tell the patient that I was enraged by them. I would simply recuse myself from dealing with that.
Yeah, I understand.
So I realize that we've expanded our time and Jeannie's here and Michael can't get on unless I get going. So I will thank you both for your call, comments, and questions and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation.
Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, March the 29th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I wrote in the chat room in response to what you all were talking about, Susan and Ellen, one time, actually several times, but I have often gotten emotional and cried when teaching in a women's intensive. And during one intensive, there was one woman who afterwards told me, she says, never do that again. You don't want to do that. The teacher has to be in control. And I'm like, it apparently brought something up for you, but I think that it's totally okay and open and honest and actually, you know, helps the students to see that, you know, we are just people just like they are and that we get triggered. And it was actually a perfect teaching tool for me to, you know, I was doing a worksheet in front of the class on Ryan. And when I got to the goal, then I used the abbreviated worksheet. And so it has, you know, for the goal, I wanted him to have a better job. This was back when he was waiting tables right after college. And so that I can, and the part of it was that I would feel like I was a successful mom. And I got emotional and cried. Well, there was, a couple of people in the class, and they were, like, wanting to give me sympathy and all this, you know. And I was like, no. I said, this is the perfect example. I said, this is not about my son. It's about me. And this is my opportunity to look at what is it that I'm hiding from myself about myself. And I was able to turn it into more of a teaching tool that showed them more accurately what it was about to do the worksheet instead of glossing over it and pretending like, you know, I was all really okay, you know, and all this. So I think it's absolutely fine and perfect to be real in front of the other people that are in the class, whether you're the facilitator, you know, teacher, whatever you want to call it. And I learn a lot by being there and really being present. So I think it's awesome. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here once again as we move forward in this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. And we had announced, you maybe missed us on Thursday and Friday, or maybe you didn't miss us at all. Hopefully the shows that Jeannie picked out were powerful. But we took a sabbatical. We had a time frame where Arya Rain was not going to be here with us, and Jeannie's brother came and picked up her dad. So we had 5 days on our own. And speaking of emotion moving, you remember that Jeannie had a major opening a couple of weeks ago where she was told that she was going to go through 5 measures of healing. And one of those measures happened this weekend for both of us. We basically turned off our phones, didn't talk to anybody, turned off our computers, and just were alone. Just did a lot of breathing, a lot of energy field work, listened to music, and just were by ourselves. And one of those measures opened, and it opened for both of us in a very powerful way. And brings tears up for me. So I think it's perfectly appropriate, to be honest. Deception is never going to bring healing. Would you like to share, Jeannie, what the measure was, and then I'll share what happened for me in the context of it? It was powerful. Just
there were actually
absolutely
two
awesome
measures. Yeah, it was. It was just a time to go inside. I mean, we did a lot of work and a lot of physical stuff. We actually fasted 2 of the days, and so we were physically ready to go into the process too, instead of numbing ourselves down. But
My first one was actually an awakening, and it was a point where I went into still point, and normally, you know, you come back out of still point with kind of a startle or whatever sometimes, you know, taking a breath. But this one was actually a gasp. I felt like I was jerked back into this reality, not actuality, but the sorrow and the terror and all that. I think we had shared about that before we actually took this sabbatical, and I for some reason didn't count that as a measure, but it was definitely a measure. And that was coming back to the point of when I gave up being, and there was just such sorrow and such terror about stepping out of that into the non-being. And then the second one was during this 5 days, and it was about trust and trusting myself and Michael, but trusting God. And instead of thinking that I had to take care of things or figure things out, and that, you know, that to believe in what he tells us and to actually just be, and that it was safe. And there were times, you know, when Michael and I had processed a week or so ago, we had shared, you know, that I had actually shared with him some things that I had never told anyone in my life about the abuse that I went through when I was 3 years, between 16 and 19 years old. And I had never told anyone. And so it was, that happened again as far as being in a safe enough space just to open up and to talk about what was going on, what thoughts were going through my head and things that I had experienced. But it was different. It was like being able to tell about it and share it and, you know, kind of be honest about what had happened and things and get it out there. But yet a lot of it I was able to share with without the emotional upset around it. It was, you know, you hear Michael often say, be the thinker apart from the thought and the feeler apart from the feeling and the actor apart from the action. And I really experienced that, to be able to just look at it like, you know, this was part of a movie of my life and things that happened, but I didn't have to be emotionally attached to it any longer and was able to let it go. And it was just, it was an awesome time. And
or
there was
traumatized.
So much stuff. Right, right.
Attached
and,
or traumatized
was,
by it.
Yeah. In one of our sessions, one of the things that had come to me during the breathing process and the energy work, and, you know, we did a lot of work around their cranial and the cranial base and the hip area and areas where I had had trauma before, especially in the, and that it's connected to the cranial. And that was really amazing, that it was like when something would pop in one area, I could feel it in the other. And just an opening and feeling it. My body at one point felt like it was so expanded, like it was bigger than just the physical, that, you know, it was like I could put my arms out and actually feel my field. And so just a lot of things like that. It was just an awesome time just to be alone and to be disconnected. And we had told everybody, you know, I had my phone where, like Ryan and Gabby and Dad, my brother, certain people that, you know, if they really needed to get a hold of me, that their message would come through my phone, even though it was on Do Not Disturb. But otherwise, we didn't talk to anybody, and we'd open the door once a day to get the mail out of the mailbox or the packages off the porch. But other than that, I mean, we didn't even go out of the house. And it was just phenomenal, and we found some music that was it's just a combination of music that just takes you into another spiritual space. I said some of my favorite songs that was in it, they were, the words were from India, so I didn't even understand the words, but the just the vibration of the music was phenomenal, and just to spend time in that. And it was just an awesome time, and we thank everybody for holding the space and sending love and support and just being willing to step back and let us have that time. I know Michael's phone goes off constantly, and so it was awesome just to have each other's attention totally. So, and I could go on and on, but anyway, you go ahead, Michael, and you share.
Well, for me, there were several things that were reinforced, and deep appreciation for the years of work, what I recognized in some work we did a couple of weeks ago, and I did share on the show, is that when we're open, when we're the space where love, literally, the molding energy of the universe can really enter, it really does collapse perception. You know, instead of, oh, there's this old trauma, and there was this, and they did that, and this, and da-da-da, that literally, when we can get to the point where love is present enough, the whole perceptual system collapses. And I just am so appreciative of all the work, years of doing the work, so I could recognize what was happening as it happened. And so, you know, when Jeannie touched into that, it wasn't like, and we've done a little bit of work, like a minuscule amount of work over the years around that. And I shouldn't say minuscule because there was some pretty tough stuff, but it was done with trauma present. But in this new space, there was no perceptual construct of the mind. It was just processing the energy of those experiences directly rather than having to process through the drama and trauma of it. So that was really powerful. And you perhaps have heard me speak before about an opening that I had back about 40 years ago where literally my mind was not in this world. And I could just, I mean, literally, I could see through the structure of the walls. I could see the energy field in which I was existing. And the level of joy, the level of the presence of love was just monumental. And I had the memory as we were touching in, it was like a similar opening. And I had the memory of when that happened 40 years ago and how excited I was. And it was just like, oh, I knew there was a reason for doing the work. I knew there was a different place to live. Yes. And in that space, any question that I asked, pardon me, I was given an immediate nonverbal but verbal answer. Something was explained to me verbally, although there was no voice, and I was given a visual picture. And when I went into that space of, yes, I knew there was another place to live, I immediately got the answer back, well, Michael, you've had a taste of it, but if your instrument, i.e. your body, isn't wired for it, if you haven't done the work, then you'll burn it out. At which point I said, okay, I'll go back. And I'll keep doing my work. And so went into that opening again this weekend on a new level. I've had tastes of it, you know, little tastes here and there for a day or two over the last 50 years. But this was full blown. And I realized that, like on a whole new level, that literally this structure, you know, I thank God for the medical training that I've had and for the information I've been given over the years about, and those who have done an intensive where we've taught energy field work, how I teach that the bony structure, the head, the spine, and the pelvis are literally the antenna, that when properly structured, literally the proper shape, because the shape of an antenna determines the frequencies it receives, that's what we're meant to capture, just like, you know, the antenna for channel 2. If you've got a proper antenna for channel 2, it captures channel 2 and reflects it into the signal into the TV set. So it was just reinforced that. And both of us, I mean, I did a lot of work. I mean, just hours of work on Jeannie's neck, more work than I've ever done on anybody on their neck. And I don't know, Jeannie, how many times, 15 different times, there'd be crack, crack, pop, pop. Not adjusting her, just holding the spaces where there was trauma held and opening. And it became clear to me, and I was so thankful for being given that information 30 years ago that this was an antenna. And for both of us, as the antenna came into alignment, it was just such a powerful physiological presence of love. It was just monumental, and the way processing happened at that point was just beyond having to process perceptual constructs about trauma, rather processing the directly through the presence of love, the energy of trauma. And I just put that out as, you know, there's where we want to head. There's what we want to learn to do. And the building of the brain cells. And I realized all these years of building the brain cells. And when it came back to me from 40 years ago about, wow, this is such a great place to live. Well, if your structure isn't, you know, ready for it, it'll burn it up. And at that point, I said, okay, I'll go back and do my work. And I just realized the value of 40 years from then to now of doing that work and of building the brain cells so I could recognize what was happening. You know, building the brain cells is such an important concept because I realized that if I hadn't had the brain cells, I wouldn't have known what was happening. I wouldn't have been able to say what I'm saying. And so 40 years may seem like a long time to somebody. To me, it was like a heartbeat. And so, so worth it. And on the trust issue, you know, there was a point where Jeannie was tapping into that. And I went over and I just said, you know, can I lay back, lean back on you? And I just leaned back on her belly and was just, you know, in that space. And I don't know how long I was there, honey, 10, 15 minutes. And what came to me, the realization that came to me, was I had not been in that safest space or that much trust since I was a small child with my mother. And the, I'm not even sure how to say it, was just the energy of that realization was kind of like coming home and just overwhelmingly sweet and awesome. And so I just hold the space for everyone to, you know, be ready to move to the next level as we all build the brain cells together and move into this literally restructuring the energetic assault that we've experienced physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And almost like, you know, with a car that's been in an accident, you know, for the car to look right, you got to bang out the dents and get it back into its proper shape. That's exactly what has to happen with this bony structure of the head, the spine, and the pelvis. It needs to go back to its original condition and remove the assaults that have happened to get back to the point where it moves through proper range of motion. You know, when the baby's soft spot hardens, we think the head is now fixed, but actually the head is not fixed at all. If you're tuned into it in a subtle way, you'll find that the head is the whole structure, literally right down into the deep sinuses and the bones of the whole skull are in motion. And it can't bring in what it's designed to bring in. Well, the system is aligned with hate and fear and rage and guilt and pain and drama and trauma. The forgiveness work removes the energetic assaults of those things. And once removed, then we can literally process the whole structure until it's back into its proper form. And in its proper form, literally, the structure of our bodies, so-called bodies, is the antenna that captures and reflects love into our internal space. And, you know, it's just, it's, I mean, to me, on the other side, especially of this weekend, it's just so obvious that that's where we're designed to live. And the only reason we do hostility or fear is because we've been assaulted genetically or in our own lives with hostility or fear. And when you think about that power person dynamic, when you realize that the child, when those three things happen that create a power person dynamic in a child or an adult, it doesn't have to be necessarily a child, although more likely it came from childhood, that when there's somebody in your life that's got more power over your life than you do, when they're not functioning as a human being, they're not functioning as love, and whatever is happening, the recipient of that energy experiences the circumstance as survival, whether it's physical survival, emotional survival, mental survival, psychological survival, physical survival. When those three things occur, literally the child's energy field opens wide and becomes a sponge and just sucks in. You know, the parent who's raging, the child whose field opens there just absorbs all of that rage energy. And then in future times, when under deep stress, that energy that was taken on from the power person is simply re-radiated, and we do exactly what our power person did to us that we hated the most. And it's just an automatic energetic reaction until forgiveness is sufficiently applied to that trauma energy. Then when the stress is so high that that's activated, there's no control. There's no, you know, it isn't that that parent who beat their child, canceled the thought, wanted to beat their child. It's just that the beatings they got when the stress became so high, that energy just takes over and expresses. And as forgiveness is applied, and that's the work, and you know, doesn't happen overnight, especially if you come from a trauma-based family system or a trauma-based culture. And we probably live in one of the most trauma-based cultures in the world right now in America. And so to apply forgiveness each time that surfaces so that we can free ourselves of that. And having hammered the dents out, especially in the cranial structure, which reflects, you know, in anatomy class, one of the things you learn is that in utero, there's a point where the jawbone literally, pardon me, sits on top of the pelvis. And they are resonating energetic cavities or structures, antennas. And when the spine grows up and they separate, what happens in the head happens in the pelvis. What happens in the pelvis literally, energetically happens in the head. And until we get conscious and go beyond all of that generational insanity, then we literally become energy fields that simply resonate and absorb all that we're tuned to through those generational patterns. That's what was called in the ancient teachings, living in the desert, living in the state of unconsciousness. And the average person, well, if you go back and read the ancient scriptures about that, they'll tell you the average person lives there about 40 years, 40 years in the desert, 40 years in that state of unconsciousness. And the solution, if you go back and read that passage, and it wasn't about being lost in a hot, sandy place for 40 years. It was being unconscious in our responses to life for 40 years, just playing out the power person dynamic. What did they say had to happen to get out of the desert into what was called the promised land? What was the promised land? The land where you are fueled and energized by active present love, as you're designed to do. What had to happen? They said the old generation had to die off. And that did not mean that everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the causes held in the structure from 1,000 generations of, I mean, just look at the history of our planet, the insanity that's gone on. And we need to get to the point where we've so weakened those energy fields emanating from those so-called, or what we could use as a metaphor, those dents in the structure, the car, the dents in them, And we've so weakened that through forgiveness that that can no longer take over and control. And as you apply each piece of forgiveness, and it seems like, well, Michael, that's so much work. Well, okay. But guess what? You don't get the result if you don't do the work. It's just the way it is. And if you're the early adopter in your family system, in your culture, you know, we're not talking about church here or churchianity. We're talking about the actual work that the man Yeshua presented. When he said, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother, that wasn't a bleeding heart statement. You've got to, you know, from your heart. That wasn't it. The heart is the unconscious. You've got to remove. You must, if you want the result. Now, if you don't want the result, you don't have to do it. Carry on with all the drama and trauma you want, and all the rage and hate and fear and, you know, all the crazy stuff that happens in the culture. You know, it's your choice. You can do that. But as you step in and begin to do the work, and it takes time to understand what that means, you're hammering out the dents, and, you know, when that old hate event gets processed out, it's literally replaced by the physiological presence of love. And one of the things that has brought up several layers of emotion and tears for me is all the years wasted in not living there, realizing that it was always possible. And just the years that were, and I use the word wasted not properly, because it wasn't wasted at all. It was doing the work to arrive at a result that, you know, probably at least nobody I can think of in my bloodline, to some degree perhaps my mom, but other than that, I can't think of anybody in my bloodline that could even conceive of what I'm even talking about. So that was that, and I mean, we're just scratching the surface of what we processed.
Yeah, when you say...
Go ahead, sweetie.
When you say not even being able to conceive what we're talking about, it's really challenging to find the words to even describe what we've described already. I mean, it's just like there are no words. You have to have been there, I guess. But it was amazing.
Yeah, several times I would say to Jeannie, oh, as a new wave of that energy would come in, I would say to Jeannie, now I know what he meant when he said, there's so many things I want to tell you, but you can't hear them yet. It's like you just don't have the brain cells for it. There's no way to even comprehend it. And that they were the points where there was such deep appreciation for the fact that the universe kind of pushed me, and I kind of chose to do my work and ended up doing this as my livelihood, and just feel so blessed by it. Pretty profound. The time that this happened back 40 or so years ago, I was actually teaching. I had a Wednesday night class every week in Delray Beach, Florida. And I was still in that experience the next week. And I got up to speak about it on Wednesday night. And I don't know, I had that class there for 6, 7, 8 years. This was, you know, probably in the fifth year or so. And I got up and I tried to speak about it, and I was so overwhelmed, I just broke down in tears and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this class tonight, and just left. Like, I just couldn't say anymore. I just couldn't be with it. So it's pretty awesome, and we're here to hold the space and help to build the brain cells for anybody that's ready to go there. Another piece that came to me in the process were the words that even the Greeks admit were left in the original Aramaic, the words from Yeshua on the cross, where the Greeks tell us that he said, the Greek translation says that the words Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani were, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? which is really quite a brilliant trick if you want to keep people in trauma. I mean, here you've got someone that you're calling God, Yeshua, hanging on a cross, and he's lamenting to God that he's been abandoned by God. I mean, just go through that mental trick and see how hopeless and helpless that leaves people. The actual words, or the actual translation of those words, is much more akin to, "Ah, Papa, Papa, for this you set me aside." Not forsaken as abandoned, but reserved, preserved for a special purpose. And it was said not with dejection or rejection, but with excitement. And two different times as I was going through some of this deep process, when Jeannie was basically facilitating me, those words just came in like with this full flood of sweetness of, oh, I got it. This is what we humans have been preserved for with all this insanity. This is what we have been set aside for. Every one of us. Every one of us. It's in our design to live that. And it's our birthright. So I'm sure other things will pop up to speak about, Jeannie, but do you have any other thoughts before we check for callers?
Just one of the things that also, and I haven't delved into the depth of it or anything, but during one of the breath sessions, my stomach actually hurt, and what came to me was the roots going into the earth. But then in another breath session later, I saw an upside-down tree and the roots were going up to heaven. And so I think that's a shift in seeing that I'm really rooted and grounded in the heavenly, not in the earthly.
That's the shift that's needed for all of us.
Yeah. And there are no hands up. If anybody has a question about anything that we've just been sharing or, about anything else, then press 1 and it puts a hand up. And if nobody has a question, then I guess we go back to reading. And I'm not sure where we left off back like about it's probably
I've
last Wednesday.
Just give me a second here.
And we did have a hand just go up, too.
Well, let's go ahead. And then once we complete that conversation, we'll
okay.
go into the reading.
541, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just didn't know whether I was muted or unmuted. I kept pushing the one button and disconnecting myself from you. This is Celinda.
Welcome, young lady.
Yes. I wanted to let you know that I have not been dragging my heels about getting my thoughts about the drawing you made on Facebook. It's that I keep going down the white rabbit hole of my mind, and it's like I'm being told, wait, and you have more to learn. And so I haven't done that for that reason, and I just got in on your conversation, and I know that I have much more to learn. So I'm listening.
Don't we all?
Right. I also wanted to share with you and Jeannie that I've been working with the Course in Miracles for 3 months now, and it just is not my messenger. I understand the message of it, but I keep going down the rabbit hole of my mind. And so I would like to offer that whole course, the teacher's manual, the course, and the workbook, to anyone who would like it. I feel like I'm being very strongly led to keep things more simple in my life. And I was wondering if that would be something I could share with the Kabouras Institute or with any of the members that watch the show.
Sure. If you want to mail it in this direction, if unless somebody comes up and gives Jeannie an address. You can do it in the chat room or what have you, or send it by email, and we'll pass it on to you. That's if you want to mail it in our direction.
Great.
We'll make sure it gets into the hands of someone who will use it.
Right, and I was also going to ask Magda, but I needed your thoughts on it first. Was I could send it also to her and have her put it in the retreat center. That's another possibility. It's just what works best for you all. I just need something more, a little more. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you want to send it to us here in Virginia, since Heartland is not open at this point, there's no activity there, so there wouldn't be anyone to see it there.
Yes, I definitely want to share it, and it's not about the message, it's about the messenger, and I'm sure you understand that. Thank you so much. I'm just focusing on the Aramaic Gospel, the Why Again materials, and my personal inclinations, mystical Christians, work, and also Rumi and those sorts of things. So I just want to let you know I'm not falling off the train track.
Cool.
Thank you.
Tell me what you used the phrase a couple of times, your mind going down the rabbit hole. Tell me what that means for you.
Well, it reminds me of Alice in Wonderland, and it's just the labyrinth of my mind, my human figure it out mind. So I want to be listening more closely to spirit, which means for me, I have a very powerful mind. I'm not dissing it, but at the same time, I'm feeling that spirit is saying, okay, Celinda, what you need is solitude, silence, and stillness with me. And that's what leads me more to like Meister Eckhart and other mystic Christian mystics and mystics of other faiths, and they bring me back to Yeshua.
Yeah, my input there would be that Yeshua had this tool, which the Course also teaches, for stilling the mind, and that tool is called forgiveness. And when you recognize that your mind has what the Course calls a trifling treasure. Oh, look at this rabbit hole. Look where I can take you with this. How exciting is this? That's the point where you step in and recognize that is being driven by a goal. And the way you clean up that part of your mind is not to ignore it, but to recognize the goal that's driving that process in you and collapse that process. And that would be the equivalent of what I referred to earlier as banging out the dents in the car.
Exactly. And I agree with you 100%, and that's why I'm choosing to keep your enlightenment book and also all of the tools of Why Again very close to my heart, and I'm working them.
Have you?
I just need a little simpler language. Pardon?
Yeah. Have you sat down with the Enlightenment book yet and done the translation from the dictionary in the back for Matthew 5?
I don't know if I've gotten to Matthew 5, but I'm working my way through the book. And
I suggest an exercise.
On the gospel part. Okay, just one moment. Let me get a piece of paper, please. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah. An exercise that I suggest everybody do that buys the Enlightenment book from us is that you go to Matthew 5, and that's the Beatitudes, and the key words are left in Aramaic in brackets. Ignore the translation that's there, and just use the dictionary in the back to do your own translation of Matthew 5. It's profound.
Okay, I have done that, and I will do it again,
We'll
keep doing
along
with the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah, I usually offer that to everybody that buys the book, so I probably did offer that to you when you first got it, but it's a powerful exercise to do, and for me, it was actually the second time that I was in the middle of doing that translation work. This goes back 35 or so years ago, and that's when I realized that the Beatitudes are not a nice philosophy, but their set of instructions. This is how to produce a result. And from the Aramaic perspective, it's pretty profound.
Yes. Yes. I really appreciate that. And I feel like I don't remember you telling me, but it doesn't matter because I got put there anyway.
Whatever. Yeah, good.
Cool. And so I appreciate you and Jeannie. Thank you. You take care and let me hang up.
All right, young lady, you have a blessed one.
You too. Love you both.
All right, take care. All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Awesome.
All right, so those
we have 19 minutes.
Well, for those who want to follow along in the book, we're on page 48 in our reading of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It's the last couple of paragraphs on the chapter on, or in the chapter on what is projection externalization. And we just finished sharing a key thought with Richard, and that was we tend to dislike and resist in others what we dissociate from in ourselves. In other words, we point a finger at someone else for that which we is an energy in us that is resonated that we want to remove from ourselves or we want to get rid of. We want to pretend isn't in us. And if someone were doing something that, you know, the whole world, let's say the whole world would consider terrible and awful and disgusting and all those adjectives you could possibly use, if you don't have that vibration, if you don't have that energetic pattern in yourself, you would simply be the state of active love for that person who's doing that thing. When you go into some form of hostility or fear in what appears to be toward them, and here's our projection externalization, what appears to be hostility or fear toward them, always, 100% of the time, the hostility or fear is about the part of you that you've dissociated from that does the same thing. In fact, if you go back, you can listen to Paul, and Paul says, beware you who judge another, for that in which you judge another, you have been guilty of practicing. And this is what he's talking about. So when I find myself in resistance or dislike of another, now that doesn't mean that I can't objectively assess what someone's doing and choose to hold them accountable for a behavior that's off the mark. But if I try to hold them accountable out of my hostility or fear, I have a problem. I'm the one who's dissociating from, projecting, and externalizing what's in me that I don't like. And so we just shared that thought with Richard. And then I offer him the thought, if you mistake them, quote unquote, as the cause of your reality, of your upset, and of your feelings, you will seem to be a victim of them and tend to dislike or hate them. If you know how feelings are formulated within yourself and take corrective action, that is, forgive, each painful situation will simply be your opportunity to heal. Richard quips, well, why should I forgive them? I didn't suggest forgiving them, Richard. I suggested forgiving the realities in your mind. True forgiveness does not mean letting someone else off the hook. You can't forgive anyone for anything. True forgiveness is a tool for changing realities in your own mind. I'd like to take that topic up in more detail later. And so that's the completion of Chapter 8, What is Projection Externalization? And, of course, we'll be talking more and more about what true forgiveness means. You know, you'll notice that we live in a Greek-oriented culture. It's totally steeped in Greek philosophy. And the Greek philosophy says, they're the ones who made you mad. It's all their fault. That's why you're in pain. But it's okay. You just forgive them. And when we do that, if you go back into the scriptures, you hear the Greek translations of the scriptures over and over and over again, saying, forgive them, forgive them, forgive them. And I can remember when I first started working with the Aramaic, and this was kind of a difficult one for me to capture, to understand at first. But there are two words that are injected in the Aramaic each time that somebody says, forgive your brother, forgive yourself, forgive, 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 forgive. And the two words are that instead of the sentence in Aramaic saying, forgive your brother, it says, forgive as to your brother. So if you and I interact and you're my brother and you do behavior that arouses rage in me, in the Greek languaging, I'd say, and you made me so rageful, but it's okay, I'll let you off the hook for my rage, which, of course, totally leaves my rage intact. In Aramaic, Yeshua would say, Michael, forgive as to what your brother just brought up in you. Your brother brought up rage. Now, forgive as to that rage. Apply forgiveness to that rage and free yourself from it. And when you realize that these energetic patterns of fear and hatred and rage and guilt and grief and drama and trauma have been going on for so many generations, our desert, our unconscious, is just full of that stuff. And the fact that, you know, pretty much everybody's doing it, it looks pretty convincing when you listen to the conversations of the world that it's all somebody else's fault. Jeannie was reading an article this morning about a preacher who's whining and complaining about cancel culture and how terrible it is. And then the article mentions how sometime earlier, and I didn't look into it any deeper, but sometime earlier, he and another preacher had actually set up and played this cancel culture game. So he'd been playing it out with others, but was whining because it had been turned on him. And he was one of the ones that started the whole cancel culture game, you know, wanting to get rid of something he didn't like. So just recognize that every time you read into any text that's founded in Aramaic, if it says forgive your sister, forgive God, forgive whoever, it's always forgive as to. That is, as to what they've brought up in you. You apply forgiveness to what's coming up in your mind to remove it from your structure. And as you do that, it's like one of those dents in the car. You just hammered another one out. You just hammered another one out. You just hammered another one out. And as Yeshua said 2,000 years ago, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. When you get enough of those dents hammered out, that's the end of living in that energetic pattern of hostility or fear. That's when you're freed from it. And the whole game becomes something significantly different. So that's what we're here to support and here to understand. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Nope. Well, I think Selinda might have pressed one again. Let me check. Selinda, did you mean to press one again? No, maybe not. Okay, then nobody has a hand up. We have 11 minutes. We have plenty of time.
Yes, we have time for another powerful conversation. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show on your phone. And then if you have a question for us or a comment, push 1, and that raises a hand in the phone queue. And Jeannie knows you want to chat with us.
Well, they switch places on the switchboard, so either Susan or Selinda pressed 1. So you're back on the air.
Okay. This is Susan on this end.
Hey, welcome, okay, young lady.
Thanks. I think it's probably kind of hard for anybody to open the mouth because of what you just told us, which is just an amazing story, and I realize you couldn't even tell it, but thanks for trying. I do have a question.
It's beyond profound.
Right.
It's kind of like the culmination of years of work and reaching a whole new level of process for both of us, a whole new level of willingness. And the other thing that I can say is that there's just a whole new level of the presence of love in our home, which is just beyond words
wonderful.
To speak about.
Mm. That's wonderful.
It is.
You.
And of course, with there being that new level of love in the presence of our home, it's in the presence of our radio show and our support of you. And so we all get to share the gift.
Well, that's great. Thanks. I've been doing my homework of listening to the videos from the last round. And
right. There
was one story you told that I didn't understand. It was about a woman who was in an abusive marriage, who wanted to punch her husband and finally got enough. I mean, first she was just taking it, and then she attacked him physically. And then she went back to him because she was so full of love. Do you remember that? Because I don't know if I even remember it right.
Keep talking. I'm
not
remembering.
That's about the filters. That's the story about the flipping filters from fear to love and then back to hostility.
Right. Okay. Now I recall what it is we're talking about. So what I was sharing in that story is that it was a factual here's what happened to a particular individual, but the difference between looking through hostility or fear or rakma, and that when hostility is active, the mind is always going to show us something that is irritating about our object of attention. When fear is active, the mind is always going to structure a perceptual construct that we will consider threatening about that object of attention. And that when rakma, that condition that Yeshua said was first order in the law, was active, then that same mind is going to produce a construct based in love toward that object of attention. So I used it as an example of, we've all heard about the woman who was being so abused, and we went and helped her to get out of the house and get free of that abuse because she was always living in threat. Fear was always active. And, you know, we helped her to get into a shelter, and now she's in the shelter, and, you know, she calls us 2 weeks later and said, would you drive me back home? And we say, what do you mean? You just got out of that abuse. Well, yeah, but, and we've all heard the words, I love him. The filter of fear has become stilled down, has lowered in its resonance enough that the mind is no longer producing that reality of threat, but rather I want to go back. And, you know, whatever is firing in the mind at any given moment, for the average person, the mind believes that it is the truth and the end all and the be all will always be that way. And then, you know, when we finally agreed, okay, I'll take you back, it didn't take her long to remember why she left, because fear is activated again, and now she's in threat. But this time she goes into such deep rage that her mind no longer is showing her anything, quote unquote, that she seems to love about this object of attention or this person. It's no longer showing her something threatening about this person. She's just pure peeved, and she'll take him apart. She doesn't see any threat anymore. She'll go after him tooth and nail. It doesn't matter if she's 5'2" and he's 6'8", because now her mind is showing her what is irritating, and she's so peeved that she's going to take him apart. So that was, if that's the accurate story that I was talking about, there was the point of that story, is to just see how different the perceptual construct can be based on which filter is active and what the mind is showing us.
Okay.
Okay. Got it.
Make sense?
Yeah. When you started explaining, you said two things. And the second one was, if it's fear, then you see this. But if it's, I missed what you said. Was it anger or
hostility?
I don't know if you can go back.
The three
hostility. Okay.
Yeah, there are three filters.
Hostility.
Hostility, fear, and rachma. Over perception, hostility, fear, and kubha, or pardon me, over intention, and hostility, fear, and kubha over perception. And depending which filter is active will determine which reality the mind is generating.
Yeah, okay. Good, thanks.
Okay. Does that make sense at all?
It does,
okay.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
That's good. Well,
anything else we can support you with?
There, you put it right. Other thoughts about that? No. But I did have a thought about the fact that I am using my iPhone as the way one would use alcohol, I think. When I, if I'm not aware, I grab my phone to check my email because I might be bored or I'm a little bit uncomfortable or upset about something. And instead of dealing with it, I just check my email, and I'm noticing that, and I'm putting some restraints on. And, you know, the way the iPhone is set up, I don't know about you, but it's probably true for you. Whenever I open my email, I have 25 or 35 new emails. Most of them I just delete, but I feel this urge to check. Anyway, it's just worth looking at, and I'm trying to get mindful about it. It's sort of a Lenten practice. It's a little late. I mean, it's Holy Week already, but it never hurts to start.
Right,
putting
right.
Putting some limits and restraints on. I'll be okay. I won't miss anything if I don't take my phone with me when I walk around the block. Even that. I mean, it's hard for me to leave my phone away from me. And I'm just saying that. I don't know what your experience is, but it's really a challenge.
Well, you know, there's a when you remember that when we achieve a goal, we get a hit of dopamine, literally in the brain. There's a shot of dopamine, and that's like the happy powder. And I think that the people who manufacture our phones are devices know that that's true and set it up so that we get that hit of dopamine.
Yep.
And when you realize that that can become an addiction, and as you're doing, you start to effort moving in a different direction, you get to experience it differently.
You experience
that would be my take.
What differently? Experience what differently?
We get you get to refrain from being addicted to dopamine, and you wake up to the state of being and not requiring that little addictive shot. You know, it's like people get up in the morning, they need their shot of caffeine because they think that's where they get energy, and where in fact the reverse happens. When they use a shot of caffeine, it actually weakens the adrenals and their energy level goes down, so they need more and more and more of it. And that's the way all addictions work. So it's a nice catch. It sounds like a piece of work to do.
It is a piece of work to do. Okay, thanks
for sure.
Thanks
all
for
right.
the report. No, so glad you had a great weekend time.
So are we thanks for your support. All right, lots of love,
awesome.
Everybody have the best. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Gene, it's going to cut us off.
I was just going to say, I put a link in the codependence page for the intensive, and I'll put it in the notes for today on the radio show where you can look up those filters for the mind.
Great.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, sweetie. Hi, everybody. Be blessed. Bye-bye.